If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Galactic Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening our seminar topic is, are you wearing yourself out, trying to be perfect in an imperfect world? Oh, we're going to have fun tonight. So, take a deep breath and call that perfect self that you are into this imperfect enchilada that you have to wear for a body. And just fill it with the perfection that you are. Just fill it. And be aware that only you are perfect. You as divine spirit. So take a moment and scan your body and notice where you're holding tension and tightness. Notice your shoulders and consciously lift and relax them. Take a deep breath. Just let all the tension and uptightness, just let it go. Let's dissolve into the softness and the lovingness of the universe, which is pure love. Love upholds and sustains everything. And everything else is something we've made up. So be aware of your jaw and notice your mouth and jaw. Because a lot of tension gets held when we clench down on our teeth and harden our jaw. So consciously part your teeth and allow your mouth and jaw to relax. And notice that one of the signs that your body elemental, your basic self, your inner child, one of the signs that it's uptight is a rigid jaw. So pay attention when that occurs and find a way to comfort that part of you that is obviously in a state of fear and stress. Grinding the teeth at night is a sign that the inner child or basic self is having an inner conflict and a sense of anxiousness. So again, when you notice things like that happen, develop a communication with that part of yourself, which is very childlike. It's like a little four-year-old. So you talk to it like you would a child and ask it what it would like to have to be comforted. And it will tell you. It will tell you very clearly. And it might be something very simple, like, don't make me do all these things that are too hard for me, that scare me, that I don't want to do. I can't be perfect. I don't even know what that is. So sometimes in our rigidity and trying to ascend and, quote, be spiritual, we exert a lot of pressure on a part of us that is responsible for keeping the body upright, intact, alive, and functioning long enough so your spiritual self can operate through it. But there its job ends. And we are kind of rough on our basic selves, kind of rough on our inner children. We don't allow them to have much wiggle room to have fun, to relax, and to have simple pleasures that wouldn't hurt us a bit spiritually and would make them more cooperative with our process. Because if you don't have the cooperation of your basic self, you can't have contact with your high self. Because it goes from God to the basic self to the high self to the conscious self. That's how the energy flows. So when you are all uptight and rigid, there's a series of senses of inner blocks that show up in the personality, and you wonder what in the world's going on. you may want to do something, but there's another part of you that's just, you know, planted rigidly in resistance. And that's usually the basic self. So that's the first place you look when you're sensing a lot of psychological blocks, self-sabotaging, all sorts of things that can come up. When you're not flowing in cooperative harmony with your inner child. And again, that's not you. That's a little elemental spirit that is cooperating with you for this lifetime and is gaining awareness so that one day it can be a soul and have a human body. So it's part of the Devic evolution that's evolving through interacting with the human personality. Your high self is also on loan. That's like the archetype that stands forward in each lifetime. You'll have a different one that comes forward again from the angelic realms to assist you in your fulfilling your soul purpose. It knows the plan and keeps you tracking with that. But again, these are two elemental beings that come in to support the action of your human expression, but they're not you, so you don't let them run you. You don't let your inner child run you. You, the conscious person, must always be in the directing of what happens through your body and your mind. And your high self is a wise counselor. So again, scan yourself. And this time, scan your stomach area where the basic self will be located in the solar plexus. And notice any uptightness. Sometimes the stomach will rumble and grumble and make sounds when there's tension or uptightness or fear. So take a deep breath, filling your belly with air as you inhale and consciously release and relax your stomach. And like that, you go through your body, allowing your conscious attention and your breath to release and relax any tension you sense. Note I said conscious attention. When you give conscious attention to something that's not quite comfortable, you begin the process of healing it. But if you don't give it conscious attention, it will keep acting out until you do. So save yourself a lot of problems. The minute you feel out of sorts or uncomfortable, give conscious attention and release and relax through using your breath. Again, deep breath. And just relax any tension anywhere in your body. And a very simple way to relax and release your throat and your whole body is through toning. And that's where you make any sound whatsoever that occurs to you. And you just tone. Also, if you wish to use the vowel tones, you can use that to tone your chakras. And you chant A, A, E, O, U. A, A, E, O, U. And in that way, you can bring a toning and a balancing of your chakras. I'll go into that in some other show. I want to do something else tonight. But just to give you an idea of where you could go with your toning. Also, when you tone and sing, gently touch your throat on either side between your finger and thumb to be sure that your throat is relaxed. There shouldn't be any tension in your throat when you sing. And be sure that you don't furrow your brow. Keep your brow serene and your throat relaxed. Notice how you hold your hands. When you clench your fists when you sleep or meditate or whenever, this actually causes you to shallow breathe from your upper chest. And it's a sign of tension, anger, resistance. So pay attention to how you're breathing. Children breathe from their belly, their diaphragm. They fill their belly first, and then the air comes up gradually into the lungs. Train yourself to breathe like that. you will breathe like that naturally when you have open, relaxed hands. Or you hold your hands in the chin mudra, where your finger and your thumb, forefinger and thumb, are joined, like the yogis. That automatically causes you to breathe from the diaphragm. So every bodily position signals a neurological and chemical release in the brain and body that gives rise to either the endorphins of pleasure or the cortisone of stress. One produces health and well-being, the other produces dis-ease. So there's an extensive amount of information found in the Vedic teachings about the correlation of bodily hand positions and one's state of energy and consciousness. It's called the science of mudras. So if you've ever wondered why the Buddha and Jesus and Kuan Yin and yogis hold their hands and fingers in certain positions, that's why. Each position transmits a particular state of consciousness. So, if you find that your body is holding a lot of tension, you might want to check out yoga, tai chi, and these can be modified to suit any age or physical condition. You can even do yoga in a chair. So, check out the things that are available for you to keep yourself relaxed and your various physical levels really ministered to. We have to take care of every part of us because the body is the vehicle and the temple through which the divine spirit seeks to operate. So you can check out various forms of body work, massage, aromatherapy, peaceful, serene music, all of that. The difference between a yoga, an approach of yoga, and gym work is that while gym work will burn out calories and tone the physical body and release excess energy, in general, exercising in a gym lacks the overall calming and balancing effect of yoga. And yoga would balance the body, mind, and spirit and bring a harmony between them, whereas the gym, you'll get good abs and good muscles and good toning, but you don't have that relaxation element. So that's just a little brief thing I wanted to share on your body. So today it's probably accurate to say that everyone is experiencing stress and tension on some level. And the reason for that is because of the level of evolution that people are at right now. We have never on the planet had so much light, so much karmic releasing taking place, and so many initiations happening within the collective field of humanity. And everyone is going through something that is advancing them in a wonderful way spiritually, but it doesn't feel real wonderful when you're going through it. So, tension holds and restricts the flow of energy, and thus it takes a great amount of energy to maintain. So if you feel just absolutely wasted at night, totally exhausted, and you haven't even worked hard, it's because you're expending a lot of tension trying to be perfect, trying to walk the spiritual path, trying to realize God, trying, which is extremely trying. So this stress uses up and wastes a lot of energy that we could be channeling and using for other things. So stress is both a distraction and a hindrance to our being able to clearly attune to our inner knower and its guidance. Stress, when it appears, is like a form of inner agitation, like mental static. So it is something that we have to master through monitoring it and becoming aware when it's there and addressing the cause. Sometimes it's coming in because you're working with groups of people or situations that are happening on the planet. It's not all personal. In fact, I think with with the case of an initiate, it's never personal. It's almost always having to do with planetary work and the solar coronal emissions that are coming on the planet, and just the stress in the grid field itself as the Earth adjusts to this quantum leap that she's getting ready to do. So there are other reasons why you will feel stress. But again, the same thing is you have to deal with it, regardless of what's bringing it forward. So mastering stress is probably a gradual process for every one of us that develops with patience and consistency. And you learn more and more to not personally, egoically carry burdens. Whether you turn them over to the Lord, surrender them to the universe, whatever your metaphor for giving them over is, do it. Because you don't have to have a sense of burden. When you have that, it's because you think you're doing something. But of ourselves, we do nothing. It's always done through us, not by us. So however your process is of letting go and trusting that it's handled, that is the approach that you want to build in as an automatic go-to. And it's all about learning to release the ego's imperative to control and manipulate outcome. It's such a control freak. But bear in mind, you are not an ego. You're not the ego. You've never had anything to do with the ego. The ego is a little crazy part of the mind that thinks it's separate from love and God. That's all. It's a crazy little thought form. So the best thing to do with the ego is utterly ignore it. Utterly ignore it. And keep focusing on who you are as a divine, perfect spirit that's forever one with God. So the ego's imperative to control and manipulate outcome is a big stressor. And the answer to that, again, is surrendering control and outcome with a deep breath to a higher power, whatever you want to call that. Sai Baba has said that 100% surrender to God, where you rely entirely on God like a kitten, is helpless and relies totally upon its mother, that kind of surrender earns 100% grace, so that God will take the full burden of your welfare to anyone who has fully surrendered. But it has to be 100% with no trace of ego. And he said that most want 100% grace for 10% devotion. So, again, you know, to get to the point where God just takes care of everything for you would be the highest place that you could possibly aspire to. And it's constantly just moving forward with trust and trust and trust. So if you find yourself just totally exhausted at night and just realize it's coming from your mind, because it's what we do in our mind that causes stress to the body. The body is inert. Of itself, it does nothing. It is animated entirely by the mind. And it's either the divine mind or the ego mind. But that's it. So to calm the mind throughout the day, take a God break. Just take a moment to remember God is present. And all is well. You know, in your worst Shrek-y moment, whatever's happening, stop. Take a breath. God is present and all is well. No matter how it looks, no matter what's playing out, God is present and all is well. And you'll notice that when you take a breath, when you do this, that you will automatically take a breath and sigh. And it's that response that spirit has when you acknowledge it, which is always a form of peace and relaxation. So you could also take a simple pause just to take a deep conscious breath, because whenever you take a conscious breath, you automatically are focused here and now. So that's a very simple centering practice. Another one that I've used a lot in past years is to tell the mind, not now. We don't need to think of that right now. For example, you want to go to sleep and your mind's going a mile a minute. Tell it, not now. We only have to sleep now. Go to sleep. That's all you have to do. Or whatever it is. It's like, we just have to eat now. Or we just have to focus on this piece of work now. Whatever it is. So you direct the mind. You just don't let it run willy-nilly. The agitated mind will try to drag your thoughts back into the past or rush you out of the moment into the future. And both of these cause tremendous stress. So the master cure for that mind is to attach it to mantra. Mantra means that which carries the mind, transforms the mind by carrying it beyond thought to awareness. So whenever you are not needing to focus on your specific work at hand, instead of allowing the mind to run wild, silently repeat your mantra. If you don't have a mantra, get one. Or you can use Soham, which simply means I am. You can also use I am. So when you inhale, hum when you exhale. Your breath is automatically making that sound. So it's silent. You don't say it out loud. I mean, you can, but I'm talking about what you can do in your mind whenever your mind is not needed to be focused on your particular work. I am, or so hum. And that's a perfect mantra. Now, remind yourself constantly that only you are perfect. Only you are perfect. And that's you as your true self, as a divine spirit. Nothing in the material and psychic worlds is perfect. And the material and the psychic realms are all of the worlds, planets, sun, stars, dimensions, galaxies, universes, beneath the soul realm, or the fifth kingdom, which is the kingdom of souls. And that's where the soul resides in perfection. And then it takes on the lower vehicles of the etheric, the mental, the causal, the astral, the physical etheric, and the physical body. So each time it descends its consciousness and its light and love and sound, it takes on another covering until you appear as an embodied human here on Earth. So all of those levels beneath that level of the soul realm are imperfect. It means that they're in the realms of good and evil, light and dark, ignorance and enlightenment, polarity, duality, polar opposites. That's what that means when we say psychic and material realms. And they're all imperfect because they were all made up by the ego mind. That's why they're called samsara or maya or illusion. They're a dreamlike creation projected by the false self, in which, believe it or not, Jesus says in the Course of Miracles, the ego projected this world of duality in which it sought to hide from God. So the ego is the one that fears God. It feels like it's going to be punished. And there's going to be vengeance when, you know, it's all made up in that mind that bought into separation. So it's a little thought form that was immediately corrected the minute it arose in the holy mind, in our holy mind. But because it went into time-space, it proliferated as an illusory world in which we are presently awakening from. So everything in the world that is happening that looks so horrific has been termed in the Course of Miracles the ego's nightmare. So the awakening process is the happy dream. It's still a dream because we've never left God. We're forever one with God. But it's a happy dream to believe you're walking a spiritual path, to believe you're ascending, to believe that you're returning home to God. You know, it's a happy dream. And most of us are in that happy dream. A few of us go into the Nightmareville occasionally, but most of us, by and large, on a spiritual path, are walking a pretty nice life, a pretty loving life, a pretty different reality than most people who are caught up in the nightmare. So, nothing in the material and psychic realms is perfect because it's not meant to be. If we ever had a perfect romance, a perfect lover, a perfect experience of God, a perfect anything here, we would never leave here. We just stay earthbound. And so, as I've said before, it's meant to be aversion therapy, so that you will do whatever it takes to awaken and never have to come back here again. Is there any value to being here? No. No. It's exactly like a dream. When you have a dream at night and you wake up in the morning, did that have any effect whatsoever on you? No. Gave you maybe a bad feeling or a good feeling, but it didn't have any effect on you. But the same thing has to be said about your daily life, which is the same dream. And so nothing you do here has any eternal value but the love that you give and the love that you receive, that you take with you. The good things that you do, the kind, the loving, the pure things that you do, you take with you. Those are forever. You never lose the things that you love, or the ones that you love. So the closest thing to perfection physically is a pure heart. What is a pure heart? A heart that harbors no ill will toward anyone or anything. A pure heart sees the good and the divine in all people and things, and leaves all the rest of to God. So a pure heart is the closest thing to perfection that we could possibly have while we're in the physical body. And remember, Jesus said in the Beatitudes that blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. So you know your heart is pure when you consistently see the good and the divine and the holy in all people and things. The most perfect act is selfless. What's that? It's where you don't have any self-interest or agenda. It's when God is acting through you with goodness and kindness and compassion, but not with any vested interest. It's just acting, basically, from loving goodwill. We can all do that. We can all operate from loving goodwill. That's so simple. Loving goodwill is selfless. In terms of spiritual practice, the most useful spiritual practice is kindness. The simplest act of service you could give anyone is a smile. Appreciation is the greatest gift we could give a brother or sister on the planet. Cultivate a sweet disposition. That will attract people to you and magnetize grace You'll become a grace magnet when you are sweet and kind. So spread happiness wherever you go. That is the most spiritual way you could possibly live. What about meditation, spiritual practices, quiet time, study of the scriptures? If you look at those things carefully, you'll find they're all tainted with selfishness. You do those things because you want something. You don't really do them because you love God. Because if you really loved God, you wouldn't have to meditate or do any spiritual practice or have any quiet time. You'd just be loving God. And having said that, I've spent my entire life meditating, doing spiritual practices, studying scriptures and stuff, to find that place that I could identify as myself, as my divine self. And I find it very, very hard to maintain that space without meditation, spiritual practice, quiet time, study of scriptures, and all of that. Maybe I will get to the place where I don't need them. So I sort of say this as a teaching for myself, so I can hear myself teaching it, because you teach what you learn what you teach. But Sai Baba said that they all have an element of selfishness, and if he said it, I definitely know that that's true. They're also like calisthenics. They're like exercise. They're like drills, because you're training the body to hold still. You're training the mind to stay focused. You're taking quiet time so that you can hear the inner, so you can attune. You're studying spiritual books and things so that you can understand the spiritual laws that govern life. And you can pattern your life after that. So I think these are all important things. But just be aware, there's a personal payoff in them, which by definition characterizes them as selfish. So we do these things, why? To be spiritual. We want to be spiritual. We want to find God. We want to be liberated. We want to be free. We want to experience bliss, right? But we're already spiritual. We already have a bliss body and a level of bliss and a level of peace and joy and ecstasy that's just beyond our monkey mind. We have that already. And we're already God. We're already divine. You'll never be more spiritual or more God than you are this second. It's not a goal to be attained. It's what's left when everything else falls away, which it does, you know, given enough time and experiences in these lower realms. You get to the point you just don't have any more attraction to the things of the world. They just fall away naturally. You don't have to give things up. They just fall away when you outgrow them. So we're already all these things. We just haven't quite realized that yet, unless, of course, we have. There are those who have. So then there's ascension. Why bother with that? What in the world do you know about ascension? Have you ever met an ascended person? Well, have you? So, there's a lot of things that we're trying to attain that are somewhat way out in the ozones that have no practical reflection into our daily life, so that we almost have to create a very artificial kind of life to embody the ideals that we have set for ourselves, which in most of cases, it's probably not an exaggeration to say that all who are walking a spiritual path have set extremely high standards for themselves. And of course, we fail and fall regularly Because who can live up to the standards they set for themselves? You know, if we had to stand before God for judgment, we wouldn't have a thing to worry about because he would just see us as perfect as himself. The problem is we have to stand before ourselves when we leave this body. We have to answer the question, how do you feel you did with your life? You know, is there anything you want to repeat? You see? So we have to somehow win in our own estimation, in our own sight. Otherwise, we'll continually keep comparing and holding an impossible ideal of perfectionism and impossible ideals to try to live up in the daily life. And therefore, we always feel like we're a failure. And so we've set such high standards that we're wearing ourselves out in the attempt to attain perfection, as we've defined it. So this striving to be perfect while living in an imperfect world, surrounded by imperfect people, is the greatest stressor for those of us, quote, trying to be spiritual. Trying to be spiritual, trying to be perfect at anything in this world is trying, and it will absolutely wear you out. Now, the so-called ascended masters have been portrayed in the most unrealistic, exaggerated, glamorous way you could imagine in most New Age books. They bear no resemblance whatsoever to the real deal. And yes, I have to say, I have met 3 ascended masters that I know of, maybe more. So let's just scratch the word ascended and say, souls who have matured to the point that they have integrated their soul to where it has become one with their personality. And they're no longer acting out of the basic self or the high self or any of these other selves. They simply are a soul functioning through the human instrument. And that would be called a disciple. But bear in mind, all masters are the disciple of a master. We all have a master. Every one of us has a master. We may not be conscious of that master yet, but the master is very conscious of you. And when the time is right and you're ready, you will know that master. The master usually appears, first of all, in your dreams. And then, if necessary, you will meet a master on the physical plane. Sometimes. Not always. Sometimes you're sent to an initiate of the master or a disciple of the master, which is kind of the same thing. But all of us have an upline. All of us have a master. The Christ has a master. The Solar Logos has a master. The Buddha has a master. Everyone has a master. And we are all where we are at the stage that we're in. We are the workers and the servers from the level that we have attained. Every one of us has a downline. Those who are coming up the mountain behind us, and we're reaching our hand down and helping them up, and we're reaching up and holding the hand of our master. And as disciples, and world servers, we stand in the middle and do the light work in this world. And that, beloveds, is eternal. It's called the chain of the hierarchy. And it means that we're all part of the spiritual hierarchy. Not like, you know, most people think of that word. Hierarchy means a sacred arch, where that sacred arch that reaches from the highest God realms down into the lowest dimensions of material manifestation. And we arc it back home. We guide, direct, inspire, uplift, and bring us all back to the unified field. So, what's the hurry? What's the hurry? This is eternal. This is forever. So, because the New Age books have become so plentiful and readily available that many have taken up these englamored concepts and are trying to practice them. You know, a friend of mine was practicing and teaching these teachings for many years. And she had a very strong emphasis upon canceling and negating the death codes, as she called them, that were in the cells because she wanted to attain immortality. And yet, she told me as the years passed, she was disillusioned because she saw, despite her best efforts to practice these teachings, she was aging like everyone else. So she dropped all of those teachings and went to India to seek out advanced yogis who had attained, in some cases, a level of immortality in which they had lived for hundreds of years. For example, Babaji in the Himalayas is said to be 5,000 years old. He's been living since the time of Sri Krishna. And those of us that come into the planet from off-planet all come in because of the presence of Babaji. And yes, that's the Babaji that you read about in Autobiography of a Yogi. So there is a stage at which the cellular regeneration is such that the body becomes incorruptible. Yogananda attained such a state. St. Clair, many, many saints of the Catholic religion are entombed in glass coffins because their bodies never decomposed. So after death, the bodies did not show any decay. What's that? They had become so pure in their devotion and the frequencies and energies they hosted in their body that the carbon-based molecule that predisposes us to entropy or decay simply was not existent in them. And then there's Jesus, who resurrected his physical body from death to life. But then he went on to live and to an advanced age in Kashmir, where he finally died and is buried according to the ancient accounts and Sai Baba. So there you have an example of a person who conquered death, who resurrected the body, but then lived out the age and died. What's that all about? Well, Jesus had, this is going to raise some hackles here, but I got to tell it like I know it, because this is the teaching in the ancient archives of the Brotherhood. Jesus had one more incarnation after Jesus of Nazareth, in which he attained ascended mastership. So he came into life as a fourth degree initiate, went through the crucifixion initiation, died, and resurrected his body, which is the fifth degree of initiation, and ascended in his next lifetime when he became a full master, and he went through what's called a sixth initiation, which made him a Chohan, or a lord. And today, Jesus is an ascended master, and one of some 14 or more ascended masters, who are living in the outer physical world today. So these are things that are written they're written and they have been seen by people in the last century, and they are known within the archives of the Brotherhood. So if you want more information, it's out there for you. But each of these ascended masters is now called a Chohan, or a lord of the sixth degree of initiation, also called the ascension initiation. Now today, according to the Master Jwal Kul, we have a large number of initiates on the planet. Many, many people in the New Age have attained at least the first and some the second degree of initiation, which is why you're so adamant about what you eat and how you live, and you're really disciples working very, very hard to follow the teachings. That's a sign that you have truly undergone initiation, when you have that kind of focus and steadfastness and commitment and devotion and dedication to the path. That's the proof of it. And many are going through the third and fourth initiations in this lifetime, which means you are becoming soul-infused, completely soul-inhabited. And some of you are going through the fourth degree of initiation in the same lifetime, which is where you're experiencing complete abandonment. And it's a very, very painful time where you can literally lose everything, because that's what the crucifixion is. The ego and everything that has made life bearable here is let go of. It's surrendered. And Jesus went through that symbolically, but actually physically at the same time when he was crucified on the cross. Everyone and everything turned against him. An example of fourth degree initiates that you could read about, the great adept H.P. Blavatsky was a fourth degree initiate. Helena Rourke, that I speak about so often from the Agni Yoga teachings, was a fourth degree initiate. Jadu Krishnamurti was a fourth degree initiate. And so there's examples out there. And if you want more information, you can read Maitreya's Mission, Volume 3, by Benjamin Krem, and you will see a list of the initiates in the back of that book. So in terms of the earth, such attainment could be termed perfection. But bear in mind that all things being relative in spirit, that compared to the solar logos, the ascended masters would be like children. So there's always a next and higher level. And those who've attained it that are more advanced. And yet comparing our level of spiritual attainment to that of another is what so many of us do, and that's a huge stressor. You know, it's like punishing yourself by shooting yourself in the foot because you don't walk as fast as someone else. So, quit it. It may help to remind yourself that there is an infinite linking of ascending souls. And I just described how we're always the worker on the level we've attained. We're always the student to the next level above us. And we're always the teacher to the ones coming up behind us. So just raise your hand up right now. Take your right hand. Take the hand of the master. Symbolically reach your left hand down. And take the hand of the person coming up the trail behind you. Okay? Stay there. That's forever. Okay? That's what we do. So why all the teaching on ascension? Well, let me just laser in on a few things you don't have to worry about. Are there special colors, special clothing, special crystals, candles, tools, techniques that we need to ascend? No. Is there a special diet? Do we have to just eat vegetables? No. What about sex? Can we have sex? What you do with your body has to do with a material dream down here. It is not going to have any effect on you. But if you believe it does, you're going to get hung up in guilt and shame and rules and restrictions, and you're going to reincarnate because you're going to make karma for yourself. So get real clear that your soul is perfect. It's training the body to come into alignment with its higher purpose, the soul's higher purpose. So all of these things, if they work for you for a while, fine, no problem. But these are things that work because primarily we believe they work. And it's our belief that gives things the power that they have. Jesus said very clearly in the Course of Miracles, I am affected only by my thoughts. My thoughts have given all the meaning that anything has for me. What matters? Your integrity matters. Integrity means to be integer, to be consistent, congruent between what you think, what you say, and what you do. That matters. Why? Because God is truth, with a capital T. So living true to yourself is the most important thing you can do. Be who you are, do what you do, and keep your intention Godward, and you will be just fine. Now, if your good karma draws you into the presence of a genuine disciple, or an initiate of the master, or a master, or an avatar, you are greatly blessed. So make good use of your opportunity and don't take it for granted. But you will recognize a person by the fruit. What's the fruit of the Spirit? Love, joy, peace, goodness, kindness, patience, tolerance, self-control, and something else I forget. Loyalty, steadfastness. That's the ninefold fruit of the Holy Spirit. So it's by their love that you recognize that people are filled with the Divine Spirit. And Baba says purity is divinity. What is purity? Egoless love. Selfless love. Baba says, God with love. Man with love is God. And God with ego is man. So do you have to be a vegetarian? No. If that were a prerequisite, all the cows and monkeys and stuff and bears would be enlightened, ascended. You have to tune in to what you need to function really, really effectively. And you need to be flexible enough that you adjust your diet and your practice as you move to the next level. Don't get rigid. That makes you stress. My teacher, John Rogers, said the one meat that he found lowered the vibration somewhat was pork. But other than that, let your body tell you what you need. The only time vegetarianism is rather strictly advised, not, you know, enforced, but advised very strongly, is for the first and second degrees of initiation. And I think that's why we have so many people on the planet today who are drawn to vegetarianism and veganism, because that helps you to control the animal nature, which is what you have to master in the first initiation, your physical body. And then the second degree of initiation, you have to master your astral body. So that's why. Do you have to be celibate? No. But you need to be chaste in your thought life and monitor your thoughts. Because what you imagine in your mind, Jesus said, is the same as doing it physically. So the masters usually advise virginity prior to marriage and to be faithful to your spouse. And Baba says we should have one wife, one husband, and not body-body contact with others. This is very idealistic. Most of us have blown up a long time ago. So again, don't be on your case if you're like most of us and less than Lily White at this point. But I'm just saying, you know, this is very, very practical advice about living a godly life. Focus on your heart. Focus on your attitude. And you'll be doing just fine. So your karma is going to decide a lot of things. It's going to decide your environment and the things that come forward in your life. But whatever comes forward in your life, it's perfect and exactly what you need to take your next step spiritually. So just know that whatever's in your life, it's there to take you home to God by the fastest possible route. And be happy, okay? Be joyful. Live a good life. Keep your heart pure. And you'll find that in that heart, that God is present. So I hope this has been helpful to you. And let's go out chanting. Anai Hu. Deep breath. Sarvesham Shantir Bhavatu. May all the worlds and all the beings of all the worlds have peace. And may all be happy. May all have well-being. God bless you. And God willing, I'll be with you this time next week.